Today is May 24th, 2017, and this is episode number 412 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, line dancing choreographer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. Yep. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com. Woohoo!
I've got this image in my head. You're standing in front of all these people that are wearing 1980s, you know, aerobics leotards with the leg warmers. And you're like, 1, 2, 3, step, y'all. It's an amazing image.
The fanfic crowd is going wild, but why that, like, that attire has never been in a line dancing establishment ever.
I'm aware of this.
Okay, all right, just checking.
My mind is an amazing place, isn't it?
Sure, let's go with that.
Yeah, let's go with that. By the way, that's not how you're dressed. You have kind of the Wyatt Earp, you know, stereotypical sort of look with a dark.
I don't know, man. Leotards with duster. A big belt buckle and a hat would be kind of.
Well, now I've got that image in my head. Thanks a lot.
Ooh, leotards with boots and a big belt buckle and a hat. And assless chaps.
Chaps, by definition, are assless. So that's redundant. It's like saying mass exodus.
It is. Chafing for chaps. All right. So listen. this show is D.
Should I just hit our outro bumper and call it good?
Well, everybody would probably be a little bit better off with that. However, we do have a couple things to talk about.
All right. Well, should we start with Schadenfreude / a warning for technology companies?
/ LOL. Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Okay, here's the background leading up to what will no doubt include Brian giving us at least one. Ha ha. Do you like my impression?
Is that a yes?
Shut up. Anyhow, so the Chaos Computer Club, they like to see if they can hack security systems on the devices we use all the time, because these are good things to try and do if you're doing it in a benevolent way.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, the white hats out there perform an incredibly important public service.
So yeah, so here's what Computer Chaos Club did. They figured out how to trick the iris scanning, the iris recognition technology that's in Samsung's Galaxy S8 smartphone, their brand new flagship smartphone. It's only been out for a month. So they can use an alternate system to get into the phone. And then they can also use Samsung Pay as well. And Brian, this is stunning how simple it is. Take a photograph of someone's eye.
Wait, you're referring, of course, to the hacking method.
To the hacking method.
Yeah.
Take a photograph of someone's eye, print it out on a laser printer, and of course you need to size it so it's about human eye size.
Yep.
And then take an old contact lens and set it over the iris area so it has kind of that three-dimensional look. Hold it up to the camera on the Galaxy S8. Boom, unlocked. That's it.
And all of those things could be forcibly extracted from a victim. The device, photograph of their eye.
Sure. And if you have a reasonably decent consumer grade digital camera, you can be 16 feet away from someone and snap a photo of their face and have a good enough image to trick the recognition scanner.
Well, okay. Okay. But you got to get their device anyway.
Sure.
So, okay. To your point, I can snap the photograph first and then pick their device. Mm-hmm. I can pickpocket the device out of there. And that way, you know, I don't even have to abduct them.
Right.
And all right. So, I mean, you know, it's just so ridiculous. Samsung is such a crappy company. They've got such a, this is just another example of them having delusions of relevance.
So, Brian, while you sit here and say Samsung is just this crappy company, I feel that it's important to point out that Computer Chaos Club got the best printouts for hacking the S8 by using Samsung's own printers.
Okay, I stand corrected. Samsung is a mostly crappy company. I wonder whose IP they ripped off to make those printers.
I don't know, but you know, you can pick up a very functional Samsung color laser printer off Amazon for like $115. The article that I wrote about this actually went on Amazon and started shopping for everything to see if I wanted to just do it and not have anything to start with and have to buy it all, mm-hmm. what it would cost. And what Computer Chaos Club said, which is the phone is the single most expensive part of this. Sure enough.
Yeah, but you're not buying a, you got to have the victim's phone. The person you're going to rob from, you have to have their device.
Right. But if I wanted to buy an S8 and everything I needed to hack that S8 so that I could show it could be done and replicate what Computer Chaos Club is doing, it costs more than twice the price of everything else to buy the phone.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I just find that to be very funny. Not quite as funny as 1980s breakdance leotard line dance.
Okay, to be fair, there are a few things that are quite that ridiculous. But anyway, but that's not the point. I mean, you know, like buying your own phone and hacking yourself. I mean, that's an exercise in academia at best.
Exactly. No, it's an exercise in academia.
Mm-hmm. But the fact that this is possible and it's going to happen. It's going to happen. The fact that this is possible is just part and parcel of Samsung's delusional belief that it brings anything to market that actually has that it can make anything that is good when it comes to smartphones. I got to point this out. The one thing Samsung has done that was sort of innovative in the smartphone market was make a big screen iPhone knockoff. Mm-hmm. And do so before anyone else. And this was one of like 53 things that they threw at the wall that year to see which would drip down the drip down the wall more slowly than everything else dripping down the wall. And it's the one thing that is the only reason why they have any share. It's the only reason anybody gives a crap about them is because they were the first to bring a large screen smartphone to market. Now, to be fair, they did in fact do that before everyone else. But it was just like I said, it's one of a jillion things they threw at the wall, and that's it. Like everything else they do is so crappy. And it's all driven by this Donald Trump-like narcissistic desire to have other people perceive them as innovative when they are not. They rush crap solutions to market to try to do it before Apple, and every time they do, it's crap, and no one gives a crap, and they don't work well. They're poorly implemented. It's just all crap. That company is so crap. Did you catch the story? Did you catch the story about the Russian police busting a ring that had compromised a million different Android devices?
I saw that, and that's pretty sobering.
Yeah, they had compromised a million different Android devices and then stole money through obviously a subset of that million device ecosystem that they had developed, and stole money from their bank accounts.
That's just okay. It's just horrible.
And the connection to Samsung simply being that Android is awful. It's awful from a security standpoint. It is awful from an implementation standpoint. A lot of the ideas that Google has done with Android are fine in and of themselves, but the ecosystem as a whole is crap. And Samsung is like king crap. They're just king crap.
I would say the Android system is more of a chaotic anarchy. Because, I mean, there's some cool things people are doing with Android, but I would not be comfortable recommending an Android phone to any of my family or friends simply because I am so worried about the security-related issues.
Yeah, and this business with the iris scanner. I mean, you know, Samsung has attached this to their crappy wallet. They've attached it to as a way of getting into your system. And of course, it's crap. And that is so dangerous. And this is what happens when you've got this, you know, rush to the bottom feeder mentality, and where one company isn't controlling the hardware and the software like Apple does, Apple being the only company that does that.
Now, do you remember the whole thing with fingerprint scans? Was where an actual image of the fingerprint was being stored unsecured on the phone? Was that a Samsung problem, or was that an Android problem?
Well, I don't think I don't specifically remember if it was Samsung, but Google is smart enough not to do this stuff because
then it would probably be Samsung
because they're not controlling the hardware and the software. And you can't make something like that secure unless you're controlling the hardware and the software. Same thing with this iris scanning crap. It's just a crap solution to try to be first to market with something, and it's going to end up costing these device owners money. Some of them, they're going to get ripped off.
I bet there's at least one listener that could give us an example of how you can secure that information, even if you don't control the hardware as well. But the point is that it wasn't done. And that thumbprints were being stored in the least secure way they could possibly be stored. And someone, a group of someone's, thought that was a good idea. And that does not instill faith or confidence in the security measures of Samsung's devices.
No, they constantly take shortcuts. The whole exploding phone thing, a result of shortcuts. The issues that they've had with fingerprints, result of shortcuts. This thing, a result of shortcuts. The fact that all of their Me Too services suck. Well, that's just because Samsung sucks. I hate that company, man. I hate that company. They are IP thieves. They are deliberate IP thieves. They are deliberate IP thieves with delusions of grandeur and delusions of software relevance and delusions that they matter. If Samsung went away tomorrow, Apple would not gain a crap ton of market share. The other Android makers would just absorb it.
If Samsung went away tomorrow, and I know I'm taking this to an extreme you weren't talking about, there would not be any more iPhones. Because Samsung makes critical chips.
Samsung left the Android market.
I know. I was totally being a butt, just taking what you said a lot further. But no, if Samsung were out of the smartphone market, then the other smartphone makers would fill in that vacuum very quickly.
Yeah, because Samsung does not matter. HTC does not matter. LG does not matter. Google barely matters. On and on. Huawei, Xiaomi, none of them matter. They're just OEMs. They're not bringing, they're not doing anything that anyone gives a crap about. The only thing that anyone's doing, excuse me, Google is the only company that is doing anything in the Android space that anyone cares about, because Google does make the Android operating system.
Yeah, where all of these third-party phone makers do matter is in aggregate, because they're taking what Google is doing and producing it in quantities that are high enough that they're actually out there for people to buy.
Correct.
And they're getting into markets where Apple isn't.
Right, because low margin, they don't make any money at it at all, and that's fine, I guess, if that's what you want to do. But any individual company, I mean, any two or three of the companies could just disappear, and no one would notice.
No, there would always be more companies to fill in that space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are various phone makers that have come and gone along the way. And when they have gone, geez, look at Nokia. They're really not in the smartphone business at all now. And
that's because Microsoft bought them.
That's not the point. The point is they were a big player in the space.
And they're gone,
you know what? And it hasn't mattered.
They were a big player in the space when they controlled the hardware and the software. Right? When Symbian was the king smartphone operating system, Nokia was the king hardware maker.
I think BlackBerry was the king hardware maker at that point. They're gone too, essentially.
Not in terms of volumes.
No, but BlackBerry was the company you looked to see how a smartphone should be made in the day.
Yeah. Okay. Globally speaking, Nokia kicked BlackBerry's butt.
Sure.
And BlackBerry did really well here, especially in corporate America. But on the global stage, Nokia was king and Symbian was king, and it wasn't even close.
And neither company is relevant in the smartphone space anymore.
Mm-mm.
So yeah, that just backs up what you're saying, that we lose a couple companies, regardless of how big they are in that space, and there are plenty to fill in the vacuum.
You know, though, I gotta say, if BlackBerry can just get Flash working, it's gonna be a real iPhone killer. Now, it's interesting because, you know, I'm sitting here talking about the importance of controlling the hardware and the software, and BlackBerry did just that, and yet they still failed. And a big part of why they failed is they were adhering to the physical keyboard for way too long. I still remember that commercial. I still remember that commercial with that punk ass just out of college kid, because I want a physical keyboard because that's important to me. I just want to punch. The reality is that he looks strapping enough that if I were to punch him, I've never been in a fight in my life, but if I were to punch him, he would punch me back and I would hurt more than he would.
You know,
so I'm just being honest.
The fact that you get so worked up and have aggressive fantasies about this tells me that you're watching way too many commercials, Brian.
Well, yeah, that's true. It was just, I mean, at the time, this would have been in 2008. So iPhone is exploding and people are still laughing about the lack of a keyboard.
Figuratively speaking, Samsung phones literally explode.
Yes, correct. Literally explode. So the sales of iPhones were exploding and, you know, growth was exploding. And there was still this segment of the world that was like dismissing iPhone because it didn't have a physical keyboard. And it was just so, it was so frustrating how wrong they were. And this poor actor has come to symbolize that for me because that's important to me.
Yeah. There was the dude, you got Adele guy, and
he was funny at least.
Yeah.
He was anyway. So
what about the Can You Hear Me Now Verizon guy?
He's a Sprint guy now.
I know.
That guy, I admire the crap out of that guy because Verizon canceled his contract and he said, "Oh yeah?" Oh yeah? Turns out my face actually has value.
And sure enough it does, because when I said that Can You Hear Me Now guy, mm-hmm. you knew who I was talking about. Oh, yeah. All the listeners know yep. who I'm talking about. And everyone knows exactly what he looks like.
Because that's important to me.
I've got the image in my head of that fight now. And there are no leotards in this one. Just
so you well, know. Yeah, and again, to be fair, this guy would pummel me. So you know, it's and he's, you know, he's just an actor. He's just an actor, and yeah. it's not his fault.
I'm glad that he got the gig because that means he had dinner that week.
It's true. Yeah. And good for him. You know, rock on. And he's much better looking than me, too.
And I'm assuming if you met him in person, you might be like, wow, you're a really nice guy. And you wouldn't get in a fight with him.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm sure he's absolutely and positively a fantastic individual. So anyway, while we're talking about this, it seems like a really, really connected thing to topic number three. So I'm proposing that we move topic number three to topic number two.
All right. I am totally fine with that.
All right. So we're talking about OEMs. OEMs don't matter. I don't care what they're doing. Remember Dell? Remember when Dell was king?
Yeah. Well, and it's because what Dell had was the best assembly workflow of any computer company.
The best logistics.
Yeah. I mean, they had it nailed. They had it down so well that I remember back in the day when Apple used to do their traveling road shows to highlight different products, you know, QuickTime or AppleScript or whatever. And sitting in on a couple of these, and one of the things that they would talk about is their own just-in-time assembly lines. Not because it mattered that much, but because Dell had made it such a big thing that even Apple had to compare what they were doing to what Dell was doing.
Right. And this isn't so much the assembly line. This was inventory.
That was all about the inventory, but they would also talk about how they were doing just-in-time delivery for parts.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And inventory. and then having their back stock of inventory that was going, you know, finished product that was going out. They were measuring it in days or hours as opposed to weeks. Yeah,
I remember writing, this was before you started working for us, I remember writing the story when Apple first beat Dell in turnaround time, the inventory turnover for their just-in-time part stuff. I remember writing that story.
Yeah,
it was a long time ago. It was like 18 years ago.
That was a long time ago. Because if I wasn't here yet, then it was a long time ago. And Yeah, and I remember sitting in. That was back when I was consulting, had my own business consulting. Mm-hmm. Good times.
So the reason why I brought up Dell is because the thing that Dell brought to market was not only this manufacturing process, which was all based in Texas, in Round Rock. Mm-hmm. Well, it's based in China. It's based in Round Rock, where they were meeting, like they could deliver you a computer in like, you know, a week to 10 days. Oh my God, amazing.
At the time, that was an amazing turnaround.
That was an amazing turnaround at the time. And that's what they brought to market. They could make a computer cheaper and faster to order than anybody else. And that was their competitive advantage. And my long running joke when Dell used to matter was that Dell spent all of its R&D money on how to build a computer with one less screw.
That's so spot on.
And they weren't developing new computer technologies. They weren't developing new, you know, they weren't doing anything. Like when Apple was working on FireWire, Dell was figuring out how to build a computer with one less screw.
You know, I remember back in those days when I was dealing with clients that insisted on using Windows. And in some cases, it's because the only way they could run the software they needed was with PCs. And they would buy Dell. And I would ask them not to. And I remember this one client, they had four computers. They went through the ordering system, spec'd out what they wanted, and then said quantity four. So they bought four of the exact same computers. When they showed up, on the outside they were the same, but on the inside each computer was different because Dell had lost focus of where their just-in-time assembly was going. And they were doing parts ordering throughout the day. So they'd order parts in the morning for the afternoon. So they'd get one batch of video cards, and then someone else would underbid, and then in the afternoon they have another batch of video cards, you know, that sort of thing. And I remember seeing computers where they had parts in them where they didn't even have drivers that would work. Yeah.
Well, and what was happening to Dell was that competitors were starting to turn to third world manufacturing. And for a while, Dell was able to keep that up by investing all of their R&D money into that assembly line and getting better and better and better and better. But once, Dell eventually had to move to Chinese manufacturing too. They stopped manufacturing everything in China, and they stopped doing these build order. They stopped specializing in the build order stuff that was sent to you in, you know, a week to 10 days. Oh my God. And they eventually lost that competitive edge that they had because, you know, because it was all part of the race to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And it's the same race to the bottom that we're seeing in the smartphone industry, and that we've seen in the smartphone industry since Apple turned everything on its head with the iPhone. And now we've got something interesting happening in the laptop space. And to a lesser extent, there's actually two different cases. There's companies like HP going after Mac Pro professionals. Mm-hmm. And then there's companies like Microsoft and Huawei and whomever that are making better looking laptops. And I kept seeing these headlines, and I saw them again yesterday, but I kept seeing these headlines where people would talk about such and such a company going after the MacBook with some new piece of crap Windows laptop.
You know, what I find fascinating about the Windows laptops that are being announced right now is that in many cases, they are no better than the two-year-old Mac laptops that
we're cranky about.
That we're cranky about. Yet they're getting all of this praise from the media. And And the difference between what these PC makers are cranking out, what Apple's cranking out, is that it's just a new shell. And you know, like the Microsoft Surface laptop, aside from the nicer display, there's really nothing that's compelling about that.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, really, there's nothing that's that compelling about that computer over the MacBook Air that they're comparing it to.
It looks sexy, though.
Exactly. Yeah,
it does have the looks. It does have good industrial design, at least if you don't look too closely. It's underpowered, it's underrammed, and it's underported.
But if Apple had made that same computer, the media would have torn them apart. Because they would have been like, wow, it's pretty, but look at that. Still the same two-year-old technology. Who's going to want to pay today's price for a two-year-old computer?
Yeah, that's probably true. That is probably true. But I mean, part of what's happening here is that the PC OEM world, including Microsoft with its own Surface laptop products. What's a good combination of product and crap? Craptic? Crapped up? Doesn't matter.
Product crap.
Product crap. I like it. All right. That'll work. Including Microsoft, is that they're being held to they have a low bar to meet, because PC industrial design has been so bad always, all the times. I mean, like, you know, Alienware. Thank you. Alienware used to make interesting PC, but it wasn't cases, but it wasn't ever pretty. Your mileage may vary on that, but and even there, I don't really think they're doing anything that's all that particularly interesting. HP has stepped up their industrial design with the Z2 and the Z Mini. What else? What are they doing?
Their whole Z product line. It's
better.
It's better. I don't think it's sexy, but it's better.
No, it's not. It's nothing like the now woefully underpowered Mac Pro. But sorry. So here we have. Here's the interesting thing. HP is going after disgruntled Mac Pro professionals. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it with hardware that looks better. But that's not the thing that's actually luring some Mac Pro professionals over to Windows. It's not the industrial design. It's the power.
Mm-hmm.
Because Apple hasn't kept up with power on the desktop. And, you know, the thing that we've ranted and raved and foamed about many, many times, which is the fact that the Mac Pro that's being sold was first introduced in 2013 and shipped in late 2013.
And it has not had a significant change since it was introduced.
No, no, exactly. And that includes the recent change, by the way. The recent change was basically eliminating the low end of the market and jumping low end of the product line and bumping the entry level price again.
You're having some real stress about this, Brian.
I am. So the thing that HP is doing to lure Mac users away is to offer them more power. And then to put it in a slightly prettier package than anything HP has ever offered before. But if HP was offering the same kind of underpower, that industrial design isn't going to win any kind of Mac. No Mac users are picking the Z2 and switching over to Windows strictly for the industrial design. No one is drooling over the Z product line. It might look better than anything HP has done before, but it still doesn't hold a candle to anything Apple ships in terms of industrial design. But what it does have is a crap ton more power than anything Apple is shipping.
Drooling over.
And that's the reason why. That's how they're getting people. And more specifically, there are other PCs that offer plenty of power. But HP said, hey, you know, we got all this power. Why don't we make it look a little bit better? so that and maybe we can get some of that business. And that's being successful. On the laptop side, PC laptops have been ugly forever. The Sony made a good laptop. Do you remember like 12 years ago? Mm-hmm. Sony was making good looking laptops.
Yeah, I remember that. And actually, there was a time when back in the day when I had clients that asked me which PC laptop they should buy, and I told them get a Sony Vaio. Because at the time, that was the only PC laptop that I felt was any good at all.
Yeah, worth a darn. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And now we have Huawei coming up with the MateBook X. The MateBook. Do you see what they did there?
I see what they did there. It's either a play on Apple's product line or it's about finding your true love in a computer.
It's one of the two. I joked in the piece I wrote about this that a blindfolded mole could see what Huawei was doing from 1,000 yards,
which immediately brought to mind the image for me from Rogue One, where the rebels get caught in the Jedi Temple City, and I just forgot his name, the blind temple guard. They throw a bag over his head, and he goes,
"Yep,
are you kidding me? I'm blind."
Yeah, LOL.
Yeah.
So, Ars Technica ran the headline that HP or that Huawei was going after the MacBook with this thing, and that's when it kind of crystallized for me, and I blew a gasket. It's like some crappy OEM PC company, and Huawei is just a crappy OEM PC company. They're a Chinese owned crappy OEM PC company with ties to the Chinese government, who have been banned from the U.S. telecom infrastructure market for fear that the Chinese government will use equipment made by Huawei to compromise our national security. So, like, you know, you want to go buy a computer with these components, you go do that if that's what you want to do. That's fine, I suppose. I wouldn't own one of those for all the tea in China.
I take it you are concerned that the Chinese government may be using this PC manufacturer to embed surveillance technology
in the computers. If I was the Chinese government and I was interested in having a chokehold on what my own citizenry can know and learn and find out about, and I was interested in becoming a more of a global power than I am, and I was interested in being able to either check U.S. or Russian or anyone else's military power, and I had it within my grasp to control what's going into a PC or a smartphone or anything else, I would use it.
It seems like a lost opportunity if you don't.
I mean, there's so much malware embedded into components at this point. It's not even funny. And my feeling is that we have that there's a bunch of stuff that could be flipped on at any given moment.
Well,
and I'm not prone to paranoia.
Well, we do know that if you look at the smart home device market, that a lot of the communication technology, it's just a shared chipset that's used in all kinds of devices. And there are inherent security flaws that are actually not that difficult to take advantage of. And we have no way of directly combating that because we can't go in and change what's burned into the chips.
Right. So, yes, I am saying that I would not own a Huawei computer or a Lenovo computer either.
Oh, that's right. Lenovo was originally part of IBM and is now a Chinese company.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, the Lenovo laptop business was originally IBM's laptop business, the ThinkPad business. And it was sold to Lenovo, the Chinese-owned company, again, with ties to the Chinese government. I think Huawei actually has ties to the Chinese military, if I remember correctly. And there, of course, Apple builds its computers in China, too. But Apple, I trust Apple to do their best to keep an eye on these things. And B, Apple maintains much more stringent control over its supply lines and supply chain than any other company, period.
It's been a problem even for Apple. But yes, I agree. Apple is far more controlling in that way. But Apple had to release a patch for a Qualcomm chip that had a major security flaw?
Right.
Yeah.
So
even Apple Huawei sometimes
puts out the MateBook X, and it looks better than any other Huawei computer that I've seen, and it looks better than a lot of laptops that I've seen. I don't think it looks as good as even the MacBook Air, but that's just me. And you know, they're quote unquote going after the MacBook, and it's nonsense. They're not going to get Mac laptop business. They might be able to get share from other PC makers. But this is just the PC world finally playing catch up to Apple in the laptop industrial design space. It's all it is. It is nothing more, and it has no more importance than that. They're playing catch up. They've had a low bar. They're not going to get Apple MacBook business. They're not going to get not with catch up industrial design.
I agree, and at the same time, I'm wondering, for the average consumer that would consider a Mac laptop, but is also budget conscious and they just don't have the depth of knowledge that we have, would the industrial design improvements that we're seeing in the PC market be enough to sway them over? And part of me says no, and part of me says yes. And then there's another part of me that says the people that would be considering the cheaper PC laptop are probably people that weren't going to buy the Mac anyhow.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I said as much in my piece, but I think you can even put it more of a different way. I think that people who are considering Windows users who are considering Macs are not doing it for the industrial design. They're doing it because they are dissatisfied with Windows. And anybody who any Mac user who is considering going back to the PC, going back to Windows, is not going to do so for the industrial design. It's going to be because they're dissatisfied with Mac OS, or they're dissatisfied with Apple's lack of attention to the Mac. And that's going to be the case, I think, much more in the Pro line, as we were discussing earlier.
Yeah, that seems totally reasonable. The bottom line is that it's not about the industrial design. It's about whether or not you're satisfied, for whatever reason, with the platform you're on.
Right.
If you are, you stay. If you're not, you leave.
So with that in mind, Huawei with its MateBook X, I expect
you want to beat up the computer. You want to beat up the guy that did the commercial. Do we need to get you into like Taekwondo for therapy classes or something?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Kind of like that.
Yeah, I bet there's some really great. Is it a dojo for Taekwondo?
Yeah, there's actually one that's two blocks from me.
Well, there you go. You can walk there too.
Yeah, I should. Anyway, all right. So it's just, it's just, it. Good looking industrial design in crappy PC laptops might get share from other PC companies, but that's it. End of story. Done and done. Not going to get business from Apple with that.
All right. Well, then adopting better industrial design is still a smart move for PC makers because they have their own ecosystem, their own direct competitors that they need to be going after.
So yeah, maybe, but I just don't want to see any more headlines about how they're going after the MacBook.
Well, in this case, it was, I think, a very warranted headline because they actually had a MacBook in their presentation and they were doing a direct comparison.
Yeah. Okay. They can do that all they want. That doesn't mean that we as the press have to buy into it. I mean, like the headline should be going after MacBook LOL. If you're going to stick LOL somewhere in that headline, that's fine. I'm going to not be all cranky about that.
All right. So, but if we did it as going after LOL MacBook, then you might be a little tense.
Is it that? Yeah, I don't know about tense. I'm just going to laugh at that, I suppose. But
yeah,
that's just nitpicking.
All right. Yeah, you do seem a little tense.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little cranky. I'm a little cranky.
Yeah. Have you been getting out in the sun enough?
Oh God, no. Are you kidding? Are you just meeting me?
Well, you know, we don't get to spend every day together, despite what the fanfic may say. So I don't know if, like, in the afternoon, maybe you're ducking out and enjoying the beautiful sun for a little while.
I try to get out in the sun, but I'm sure I don't get out enough. But we have one more Cranky Brian topic.
Ah, Cranky Brian Day. Woohoo! What are we going to talk about now?
We're going to talk, and I'm going to do my best not to have to make us use the mature language.
I would button. Really, really appreciate that.
Is crappiness okay if the crapper is being honest about the crappy things that they're doing?
Well, there's probably some context that goes along with this for giving you the appropriate answer. But let me start off by saying there are certain situations where yeah, it's probably appropriate. Let's say you have a plumber, since we're talking about crap, and they're going to have to rip out your floor, and it's going to trash your whole house. And
that's not the kind of crap I'm talking about, though.
Okay, so then we need different context.
Yeah, I mean, like, so, all right. So,
do you
so,
like
so,
how I was setting that up for you?
I do like that. So, the in this analogy, would it be okay for the plumber to steal your china as long as he was telling you that he was stealing your china? You know, and he's no, I'm gonna come out there. Yeah, I'm gonna fix your toilet. Now I'm gonna steal some china from you. You know. So I want to be upfront about that. And you're right. Like, oh, okay. Well, I know what the deal is. So you know, it's my choice to take the deal or not. So you know, there's nothing wrong with that company's business model.
Yeah, here's another example. It's a weekend. It doesn't cost any more for the plumber to do what he does on the weekend, but he charges you triple, and he tells you, "I'm going to charge you triple just because it's the weekend."
Well, I don't know. I'm a big believer in the 40-hour work week. Someone's got to get a day off.
Well, what if his work week starts on Wednesday?
Yeah, it's not that. Yeah. Well, then. All right.
I'm not helping.
No, it's not a very good analogy, in my opinion. But here's the thing I'm talking about. I'm talking about surveillance capitalism again. Mm-hmm. And I've been seeing this defense lately that. We know what the deal is with Google. We know they're going to pillage our life. We know they're going to read our email. We know they're going to profile us. We know they're going to track every little freaking thing we do on the internet. We know that. And since they're so upfront about it, it's okay. And that pisses me off because screw surveillance capitalism, screw Google, screw it, screw having these wiretaps in my home. The fact that these companies are being, some companies are being upfront about their horrific and disgusting business model does not make that business model okay, in my, not at all, not even the tiniest little bit humble opinion.
So should I share with our listeners how I triggered you into this topic?
Sure.
All right. So Twitter changed their terms of service and said that they're not going to honor the do not track settings in the way that they have been previously. And so people are like, I can't believe Twitter's doing this. And the context for this is that Twitter has actually been a long-term supporter of Do Not Track and was hoping that they would be leading other companies, by example, into honoring Do Not Track, you know, which is the thing where your web browser is following what you're doing when you leave a website, and so some other company still knows everything you're doing, even though you've gone to another site. And Twitter was one of the companies that was really pushing for this early on. And what's happened is most companies have chosen to not honor Do Not Track settings in our web browsers, and so ultimately, Do Not Track has essentially just fallen apart and is not a thing anymore. So what Twitter said is, look, it's just kind of dead. So we're changing our terms of service because this Do Not Track thing, it's just really not happening anyhow.
You know, I have less... Twitter's policies here aren't setting me off. Your bringing that up reminded me of a Facebook post that was critical of Google's policies, and then a vigorous defense that was put up along the lines of what I just said, is that Google is honest about what it does, so you know it's okay. And that's where I'm cranky, and I think that the practical reality you just described for Twitter makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I can see it happening, and I, like of all the surveillance capitalist companies out there, Twitter is probably the least offensive to me, for whatever that's worth. And I don't know if that's worth anything.
Well, sometimes you have to take it as you can get it. but going back to Google, I totally get why you have blown a gasket and you cannot get that gasket sealed again. It's because part of the problem for me is that Google started off with the company philosophy of do no evil.
I think that their profiles on us are the definition of evil.
Yeah.
I think collecting this kind of information on people, amassing these dossiers on people, is inherently evil.
Yeah, and I think that somewhere along the way their philosophy, even though it's not on the wall anymore, actually I think they took down the do no evil sign from the wall in their corporate headquarters. I've heard that. I don't know for certain. But they should have changed it to don't get caught doing evil.
Well, I can see this through Google's eyes. Google's eyes are Google's Larry Page's and Sergey Brin's, and I'm not going to – I'm not sure Eric Schmidt has a soul. So I'm going to leave him out.
Well, if he does, Google knows, because they know everything.
That's true. That is absolutely true. But I think that their rationale for what they do is that we want to offer all of these services, and the way to finance all of these services is to sell targeted advertising. And we're sort of protecting your privacy, and that makes it okay. It's one step at a time, right? You know, you look at like a really bad relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And when the person, or maybe from the outside, or the person who's on the inside of the relationship, and they finally realize that it's awful, and they're asking themselves, well, how did I get here? And the answer to that question for all of us, every time, whether you're in a good place or you're in a bad place, is you got there one step at a time. And when you're in a bad place, each little step is perhaps unrecognizable or acceptable. Mm-hmm. It's only when you add them up and you look at the end result that you realize that, my goodness, I shouldn't have taken all those steps. And my assumption is that that's how Google got to this nasty business model that it's at today. Same thing with Facebook. Actually, my feeling about Facebook is that that Mark Zuckerberg really just doesn't even care. He just wants to do all the stuff, period, and he doesn't care how he does it. I mean, you know, Facebook. So to that end, as a matter of fact, I'll actually throw in the argument that I was just ranting and raving about. Google has, in fact, always been honest about what they do, whereas Facebook has done all kinds of crap without being honest about it. Like, you know, like experimenting with us.
Oh yeah, when they were essentially A/B testing people to get emotional responses.
Yeah, deliberately feeding some people nothing but negative news to see if that affects the way they interact with Facebook. I mean, that's so freaking disgusting, man. It's so absolutely heinously disgusting that they would play with people's lives that way.
Yeah, it is.
And Facebook has done lots of stuff like that, where they just they're incredibly cavalier about our lives. You know, like Uber has done all of these horrible, nasty things, and you know, the only ones we know about are the ones they got caught doing. Facebook, to Larry's credit, Larry and Sergey's credit,
mm-hmm. Again, over at Google. Yes,
I'm going to leave Eric Schmidt out. To their credit, they have, in fact, actually always been honest with us. Doesn't make it okay. Does not make this end result that they have. It does not make the fact that their entire business model is based on spying on us and then selling the results of that spying. That's a wrong thing to do. It's one of those things that you can do, but that doesn't necessarily mean you should do it.
You know, this is the one element that I think is the linchpin for many Mac users. It doesn't matter how far behind they feel their hardware might be or what features from other operating systems they wish they had. The fact that Apple is very actively not into selling our data is a big thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. Not enough people. I mean, Tim Cook has said that privacy will become a competitive point, and it hasn't really yet. Most people,
I don't see that happening anytime soon.
No, it'll take a catastrophe of some sort for that to happen. Unfortunately. And I hope that catastrophe never ever happens. As much as I would love to see privacy become a selling point, I don't wish a catastrophe on people wish fulfillment on for what I want the business world to be.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't want to see a horrible thing, whatever that may be, happen that scares people or opens their eyes.
Yeah.
To the necessity for better personal privacy measures. But on the other hand, I think for many people, because they just don't get it, it's going to take something where they get burned as a whole, like entire communities getting burned as a whole.
And younger people are frankly, like, I mean, we are outliers, and I would assume by definition, at least some, if not most of our listeners are outliers on this because we are on about it all the time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's concerning because this trend I don't see changing anytime soon.
No, I don't see it changing anytime soon either. I am doing what I can to minimize the impact that surveillance capitalism has on my life. And I do it by eschewing services that rely on it as much as I can.
So I know we're out of time, but I'm asking you anyhow. Mm-hmm. What measures are you taking with your email? This is one area where so many people forget that that they can be exploited for information.
Yeah, not enough. We ran a deal yesterday on Sovereign. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with them?
Yes.
Their whole thing is, go ahead and pay us for email, and then we're not going to screw you. We're not going to screw your data. We're not going to pillage your data. We ran a deal on that yesterday. I think it was $10 for a year. If only there were a way for me to check.
If only. Well, while you check, one thing I'm also doing is... it's actually two things. I set up a certificate for so I have a digital signature attached to my emails, so you will know if someone has altered a message somewhere along the way that I'm sending you. And then I also have encryption set up. So if I am emailing with someone that that has their own encryption keys, then we will have encrypted email. I wish more people would do this.
Yeah, that would be important. But, you know, I mean, even our company email here goes through Google because Google offers a fantastic platform for doing corporate email.
Yes. And if you were to set up encryption on your email, then you and I would have messages that Google couldn't parse through.
Right. Okay, I'll do that.
Awesome.
That's a good point.
Dave has done it. I have done it.
Yeah. And when I said earlier that I'm doing what I can, I didn't mean to imply that I'm doing everything.
No. And what I was doing was a setup so that you could share something that you're doing, and then I could share this so that people know there are things that they can do with their email. And I was trying to make it seem very natural and organic the way we flowed through the conversation. Did it work?
Yeah, I kind of foiled it.
Yeah, it was great all the way up until you blew it at the end.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks. But the important thing is people now know that there are email services that they can pay for that will keep their email private. And then you can set things up in the Mail app that will encrypt your messages too.
One thing that Google is doing that I love and hate is they have the ability to finally, you can pay to watch YouTube ad-free. Mm-hmm. But what I really want to be able to do is I want to be able to pay to watch YouTube videos ad-free and also to not have my YouTube watching spied on. I want both. And that, of course, you know, that's Google's not going to do the one thing.
No.
Yeah, you know, I said for a long time that I'd pay $100 a year if Google would let me just pay for their services.
It's not worth it to them. You're worth more if they can mine you.
Yes.
Yeah, because they need to mine everyone for the value.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Even if their ability to sell ads to me or to sell me to advertisers is not bringing in directly $100 a year, what they're able to learn through machine learning and neural nets and the broader database of everything that they're collecting, each individual is in fact worth more than that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But they are at least letting us pay for YouTube if we choose to.
So, you know, there's that. Wow, what a happy, uplifting show today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here, I've got some happy, uplifting music. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com.
Our content, scribed by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth, provided by Cashfly. Bases by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that is all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.com.